What's up, everyone? This is Anthony Pompliano. Most of you know me as Pomp. You're listening to Off the Chain, simply the best podcast in crypto. Let's kick this thing off. Pascal Gauthier is the president of Ledger, one of the most well-known crypto hardware wallets, and the creator of the Ledger Vault for institutions. In this episode, we discussed his past experience building a data company that Yahoo bought for over $500 million, his time in venture capital, and of course, the importance of cold storage and why you should care about it. Aside from that, this is our last episode of 2018. We'll see you again in January for season two of Off the Chain. Before we get started, I want to talk about one of our sponsors, BlockFi. These guys are doing really interesting work in crypto lending. What they allow you to do is keep your crypto, put it up as collateral, and receive a US dollar loan funded directly to your bank account. They do loans ranging from $2,000 to $10 million, and they're perfect for helping you reach your financial goals of all sizes. You should visit BlockFi.com/pomp. Again, that's BlockFi.com/pomp. Again, one more time, type it in, blockfi.com/pomp, if you'd like to learn more about putting your crypto to work without having to sell it. Definitely do it. This podcast is presented by Blockworks Group, the only blockchain event and media production company I trust. If you're an investor, lawyer, accountant, or entrepreneur and want to attend exclusive events and dinners, visit them at blockworksgroup.io. I promise you won't be disappointed.
Anthony Pompliano is a partner at Morgan Creek Digital. All opinions expressed by Pomp or his guests on this podcast are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Morgan Creek Digital or Morgan Creek Capital Management. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Pomp as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
All right, guys, we are here with Pascal. I'm super excited because I don't think a lot of people know the intricacies of what Ledger does and how it works. But before we get to that, why don't we just start with your background and kind of how you got into crypto?
Yeah. Hi, everyone. So my background is actually in advertising technology. Okay. I started my career in 2000, just after the crash of the internet bubble, and I started by selling clicks and advertising and banners, and I built my career into this. My last company was called Credio. We listed Credio at the Nasdaq in 2013, and it was listed for a little above $2 billion in valuation. So that was an amazing ride, starting from France and building company everywhere in the world, from 15 people to 1,000. And what I've learned from advertising technology is how to scale companies, because it's one thing that ad tech companies do well is to scale and to become global very quickly. Mm-hmm. After I left Credio in 2013, after the Nasdaq introduction, I was thinking of opening my chakras to business and see what's out there. And when you start from France and you build a $2 billion company, there's advertising technology is pretty much done for you, because the probability that you will build another successful business like that in the same space is very low. And also, I was getting frustrated by the GAFAs. In advertising technology, what's very difficult is to build a company where you have those big sharks swimming around you, and it's very tough to build competitive products when you have gigantic companies like this competing with you. And so, I thought, where can I go that I don't have this GAFA pressure, and what's new out there? And Bitcoin in 2014 for me was really like the hooray moment, or the eureka moment, where suddenly you see that there are new protocols that are very new, not many people working on these protocols yet, and a lot of potential. I think that everybody that's listening to this already agrees with the potential of crypto, but in 2014, maybe it wasn't as easy to see, and in 2008, even less. But I saw the potential, and I thought, wow, this is a great potential to redefine so many things that we do in terms of transmitting values to one another, and peer-to-peer type of system, and all the good things that people like in crypto. But I also thought that it was a great business opportunity to build a company that could become really big, very global right away, because Bitcoin and crypto is a global phenomenon. From Paris, where we have great engineers, and not competing with Google and Facebook right away. So this is why I'm here.
Awesome. What's the first time that you ever heard about Bitcoin or crypto?
So yeah, it was in 2014. I was actually I was an entrepreneur in residence with Index Ventures in London. And we were doing these investment meetings, and Bitcoin, you know, was a buzzword that started popping in into the meetings. And, you know, at the beginning it was like, what is Bitcoin? And, you know, in the end it's like, why not Bitcoin? And Index made a few investments way back when. And it was at the time when Bitcoin was like skyrocketing to 1,000 and just before the Mt. Gox incident. And this is when I was first exposed, and I met with an amazing guy, Vences Cesaris, that a lot of people know, the CEO of Zappo. And he pitched like a group of people at Index, like in 5 minutes, Bitcoin. And I was like, okay, done. Like, you know, I believe that guy. And so he got me really excited about the space. And for me, it was a no-brainer. And the no-brainer, it was a no-brainer, but I saw a few gaps into Bitcoin. And the two gaps that I saw was data, the lack of data, the lack of knowledge. And for a guy like me, like I come from a non-technical background, you know, mm-hmm. I don't have a financial background as well. So, you know, for me, it was hard to understand at first. So I thought data and content was missing, and security was a big missing piece. And after the Mt. Gox incident, it was very clear the security governance was a critical piece where I think this industry cannot go further if we don't fix it. And that's what Ledger is about. We are about to fix this.
Got it. And when you decide, hey, I'm going to go into crypto, did you know exactly what you wanted to build? Were there a couple of different ideas you explored? Like, walk me through the process from, you know, once this comes in, say, okay, I got it. I understand Bitcoin. That's interesting. You start looking at different opportunities. You identify these two areas. How do you get from there to starting Ledger?
Yeah, so no, that's a great question. So first, I was lucky enough to have liquidity from my previous company. Mm-hmm. So when you have liquidity, you have time to be a thinker. So I built my company called Challenger Deep. And Challenger Deep is the lowest point on Earth. It's in the Mariana Trenches. It's under the ocean, and it's mainly unexplored. And for me, it was like the name of my company was because I wanted to explore that world, like not knowing what was under there and knowing not much. And so I built the company before knowing what to do. And the first thing that I did was data, because coming from the advertising world, data is something that we manipulate a lot. So we know the value of data. Mm-hmm. And so my first play was to be data, and the company actually now is called Kaiko. So from Challenger, you call it Kaiko. And I've got Ambre Soubiran, who's the CEO and running a team of 12 people and doing great things in the market right now, and basically selling data, like market data to mm-hmm. you know, hedge funds and so on and so forth. So that was my first idea. But you know, when you build a company, your chances of success are very low. And so I projected myself into this business thinking that I just wanted to invest and be part of this revolution, and thinking that it would sort of buy coins, you know, that was part of my investment, build my company, that was the second part, but also invest in other people's company, because the possibility of me succeeding with my own company was very slim. And so I thought, like, you know, let's not put all my eggs in the same basket, and let's also bet on other people that better know what they do. And so that was at the end of 2014 when I met Eric Larchevêque, Nicolas Bacca, and the founding team of Ledger. And this guy pitched me security, which I thought was a big gap. And they were doing something around the SIM card, because, you know, I don't know if you know, but the SIM card industry was invented in France. So actually in France, we have all these developers and people that are very strong at building, security that is a combination of hardware and software, and that is protecting the banking secrets for the past 20 years, and the telecommunication secrets as well. And so when they pitched me the simple idea of like taking that SIM card technology and applying it to crypto, I thought, you know, this sounds like a great idea. And also this sounds like an idea of, you know, this is why a company based in France has got an edge and have something to say to the market that is very different and probably really good. So, you know, it took me 5 minutes to make an investment decision. And I told Eric, it's okay, man, here is like 200,000 euros. It was a seed investment, so it's my biggest seed investment ever. I said, I give you 200,000 euros, but I want a board seat, because, you know, I want to be with you guys, and I also want to help you, and I want to know what's going on. And at the time, lucky me, the team was desperate for money, so they gave me the board seat without thinking about it. But then I was the first investor. I triggered the round, so everyone followed me. So the first round was 1.4 million or something like that. Apparently, other investors like saw me investing like crazy, like a signal that Ledger was good. But Ledger was good because technology was good, the team was good, and being at the board seat has been amazing. So I've been 3 years at the company as an independent board member, and last year and a half as the president of the company. So really helping with operations, scaling, and going to market.
Got it. And when they first pitched you, what was the kind of product or the idea? Was it what they ended up building, or was it something else?
No, the product and the idea was exactly the same that we have right now. So what you, the Nano S that you see was the original idea. They showed me a prototype at the time that looks nothing like the Nano S. And they were like, this is what we're going to do. I'm like, okay, it's ugly as hell, but, you know, whatever. Like, you know, people want to protect value. So I thought that having another device would make sense. When a lot of people say, like, but why would you have another device? You have your phone or you have your computer, it's good enough. Like, you know, software only is good. Like, nobody's going to go for another device. But actually what we found, but I believed in that vision and in this theory, but we found that for now, another device is cool. What I also know now, which I didn't know at the time when invested, is the core technology at Ledger is not so much the device, it's not the hardware, it is the operating system that sits at the heart. And this operating system has been beautifully designed so it can operate in any kind of hardware. So I think that's the massive innovation of Ledger is to have built a security platform that is partially closed because you want to protect the secret, but also partially open so any third-party developer can actually code now on Ledger platform, and the Ledger operating system can go in any kind of hardware, which is why we're able to secure individuals. That's what we do with a Ledger Nano S product, which is why we're able to secure enterprises and B2B. This is what we do with a Ledger Vault for hedge funds, family offices, law enforcement agencies, like anyone that holds coins and need governance on top of security and easy of, you know, to make it easy to use. And these are the three things that we do. And finally, we will secure objects because objects will be connected to blockchains, and objects in the future have critical digital assets that need protection, and you can use Ledger technology in order to do that.
What's your take on the current security landscape, right? And the reason why I ask this is I think most people who aren't overly familiar with the crypto industry, they read these headlines that are, you know, there's exchange hacks, there's people who are, you know, they get hacked, they lose Bitcoins, you know, they do all this stuff. What's actually going on the ground, right? What are like the threats on the security side? And then we can get into kind of how you guys actually use cold storage and different things to kind of mitigate those. But what are those threats and what's kind of that security landscape today?
Look, it's a great question. I think number one, crypto and those blockchains, this is very new. This is the first time that we've created a digital asset that is unique. And because this digital asset is unique, it can be stolen very easily. So I think what makes the technology absolutely great makes it also very fragile. If you think about digital assets before, like nobody can steal you, nobody can steal an MP3 from you. Like it doesn't really matter. To steal a Bitcoin, it's a big problem. And to steal like 10,000 Bitcoin or 100,000 Bitcoin, that's a much bigger problem. And you can steal that in one transaction. And if you think about like assets and commodities, like anything, you want cash, gold, to steal anything at scale, at this type of scale, is very difficult. Like, you know, when was the last time a bank was hacked, like $2 billion in cash that they never recovered? Like, it doesn't really exist. How do you steal $2 billion worth of gold, of oil? The only way of actually doing this at scale is to have an army and to invade a country. That's how you do it. But with crypto, you can be a hacker in your living room and, you know, somewhere, anywhere in the world, and, you know, you hack exchanges every day. So the stats that we have is exchanges every day lose $2.7 million. So it's a big number, we feel. And they've lost so far $1.8 billion.
Wow.
And we believe that it's because in the old world, and the new world being crypto, but in the old world, security is taken for granted because you cannot really lose value that much. You cannot really use money again. You cannot lose gold. Like if you give your gold to UBS, like, you know, nothing is going to happen again, because it's difficult to steal gold. Like, how are you going to do that? You bring trucks, like, you know, guys with guns, like it's very difficult. But with Bitcoin and crypto in general, it's very easy to steal. So, but because we're coming from this world where everything is secure, I don't think that there has not been a mentality shift yet from most of the players in the space. And you would think, oh, you know, people should take security seriously because we're being hacked every day. But actually, no. And when I read stuff about the new technology that is being deployed today, and everyone talks about cold storage, like it's a great technology. I mean, cold storage is not a technology. It's nothing. Like, you know, you can put your keys on a piece of paper.
Let's talk about it, right? So yeah. Let's describe what is cold storage, right, to start with.
in a very simple, I can explain your cold storage in one sentence. You write your private keys on a piece of paper, you put it in the book, and you put it in your library at home. Okay, that's cold storage.
Because it's the actual private key that is not in any, you know, form or shape connected to the internet.
Yes. Right?
Okay. And so what are the different ways right now that people are doing cold storage, right? There's what I would consider, there's custodians, right? So basically you give your private keys to somebody else and they hold them for you. Mm-hmm. There is self cold storage where you put your crypto on a device and yeah. you're doing this yourself. What's the pros and cons between those two things, the self cold storage or custody versus the use of a custodian service?
I don't think I would put it like that. I think
okay.
the main difference right now in the market is the technology difference. And I'm sorry that I will advertise for Ledger, but I think that we have a technology approach that is very different from what the market is doing. So most of the market, so whether it's a custodianship or self-custodianship, like that doesn't really matter, but like the technology to protect the private keys, like most of the market says we cannot be connected online because we don't have enough security. And so we're going to put everything offline. And the day that we need to do a transaction, we're going to, you know, send someone to check what is offline and actually to bring it back online. And which is why it's very inefficient, which is why every solution that uses this type of technology is, well, again, it's not really technology. It's just like, you know, putting a computer in a dark room is not technology for me. But you need to go from cold to hot. This is why you have a 48 hours delay if you want to have your money. Like you cannot do a transaction mm-hmm. real time, which is silly. We bring this technology to the market that is not a new technology, actually. It's a technology that's been used by the banking industry for a long time. So typically, if we think about the enterprise industry, we've developed everything. Our operating system is ported onto an HSM, a hardware security module.
Okay.
The HSM protect the private keys, and through the devices that we have, the Ledger Blue, you can actually sign on the HSM, and the communication between the Ledger Blue and the HSM is secured. The HSMs have been designed to be online all the time. You actually don't need to bring them offline. So the HSM acts as a protection of the private key.
Well, so hold on, before we keep going, I want to make sure that I clarify this so people understand. The cold storage yes. is secure based on what it does, right? But there's some downsides to it, right? The ability to go from cold storage to hot
yes.
can take a while, right?
Yes.
So the nature of, that's why it's secure and just slow, etc. What you guys have developed is something that is secure, but also doesn't have some of those downsides that true cold storage provides.
Exactly.
Right? And so today you have two separate pieces of hardware, if I yes. understand this correctly.
Correct.
Let's talk about the actual Ledger itself. What is that?
What do you mean, Ledger itself?
Like the USB.
The USB, I'm not sure I'm following you.
Not the HSM, the other hardware device.
Oh, yeah, the Ledger Blue.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
yes,
yeah.
yes, 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 yes. It's an authentication device, okay? Mm-hmm. It acts as an authentication device in the sense the private key is not in the Ledger Blue. The private key...
What is on the Ledger Blue?
It's just a part of the private key because... Okay, let me take a step back. So... Basically, what happened is we are four in the room right now, mm-hmm. and we all run a hedge fund.
Okay.
And we have $100 million in Bitcoins.
Okay.
Who has access to the private key? I don't trust you enough, so only you has access to the 100 million. And actually, your LPs, everyone is going to ask you, you know, what's the governance on these coins? So actually, what you want is a set of rules so we know how we're going to operate these 100 million and who's going to have access to the coins.
Like, yep.
So typically, if we need to make a transaction above 10 million, we have agreed administratively that all of us four need to sign the transaction, for example.
Okay.
If it's below 1 million, then only you can sign, et cetera, et cetera. All these rules are coded and enforced by the hardware. So basically, we can now sort of have any coin in our hedge fund, and any coin, all the governance rule will be run by the hardware. So some coins, as you know, support multi-signature at the protocol level, other coins don't. But actually, in our technology, it doesn't really matter because all the multi-signature and all the rules are enforced by the HSM and by the technology. But I'll give you another example why being online sort of all the time, why still being secure is very important. And why cold storage in many cases won't work in the future. How do you stake coins mm-hmm. when you're in cold storage? You can't. It's a big limitation of cold storage. So typically all these companies that are doing cold storage on one side and then they go hot, the day that you want to stake your coins, they're going to have to come up with a different solution because cold storage is not going to work for this. Our technology sort of adapts to whatever evolution of the market is coming, because as all the rules and the security is provided by, it's actually the combination of the hardware and the software. Every layer on top, you can bring onto the platform. So typically right now we're developing proof of stake and delegated proof of stake as new protocols that will be implemented both in our hardware wallet and in the Vault solution. So if you work with us, you'll be able to stake your coins or delegate the staking of your coins to a third party.
All right, before we continue with this conversation, I want to mention our sponsor again, BlockFi. Remember, they do crypto lending. So you posted your crypto as collateral, they give you a US dollar loan, and you can use the US dollars to do whatever you want. You should visit BlockFi.com/pomp and then tweet at me that you went. If you tweet at me after you went to BlockFi.com/pomp, maybe I'll throw you a like, a smiley face, or the fire emoji. The fire emoji is the best. Remember, go to BlockFi.com/pomp and I'll see you on Twitter.
And so how does the HSM, right? Let's say, go back to your example with four people at a hedge fund with $100 million in Bitcoin that's sitting on the Ledger Blue. How does that piece of technology actually, when all four people say, okay, I want to sign off on this, what is the user experience for signing off to get those private keys to actually move some percentage of the crypto?
The experience, I mean, like, what would we experience us as human beings?
So we all say, okay, let's do it. You know, we get the HSM, and what do we do?
Yeah, so it's a SaaS product right now. So you wouldn't be getting the HSM. What you'd be getting is a part of our team coming to your office, showcasing your product, explaining to you how the platform works, and you'll do the key ceremony. So what is very important that you do the management of the keys. The HSM you will never see unless you want it on-premise, but that's a different discussion. But let's say that you use our SaaS product. We take care of the HSM, we take care of the technology, and we just come to help you set up your authentication devices. And there are different type of authentication devices. There are some for the administrators and some for the operators. So typically what's happening is you cannot operate the phone and administrate the phone at the same time.
Got it.
Your CFO and, you know, some people in your company or in our hedge funds will be the ones setting the rules, and then traders will be the ones sort of spending the money, if you know what I mean. And again, all these rules are enforced by the hardware, and the hardware provide many other good things like segregation of accounts, audit trails, et cetera, that you cannot really get with software only.
Okay. And then who's buying these, right? Are these mostly retail individual investors, or are they, you know, larger organizations, enterprises, a mix? Like, where are you seeing most of the interest today in the hardware products?
Family offices, hedge funds, big institutional players, like everyone needs technology at the heart. What you have to understand is right now when we say Ledger Vault, we are showcasing a product and it's a SaaS product. However, you can sort of strip down our technology right down to the operating system. So in theory, anyone in the industry can work with us and work from like sort of the bare HSM with the operating system sitting on top, and you could code everything on top of that. So we have various discussions in the marketplace. Some people just need the products, like the SaaS product, because they want the end-to-end product that does everything from them. And other people have like more complex security schemes, and they want just the hardware and the software of Ledger running at the heart of everything that they do in terms of their security, but then they build their own applications on top. So in reality, you could use the operating system and rebuild everything on top, including your blockchain explorers, et cetera, and or you can start using different bricks that Ledger provide to you.
Got it. And then what can you tell me about the company in terms of number of customers, revenue, units sold? Like what data points can you share with us?
We have many data points.
The more you share, the happier I'll be.
Exactly. Look, we sold 1.4 million units of our Ledger Nano S.
In what time period?
Since we started.
Okay,
yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. We had a killer Black Friday. So interestingly, as the price was plunging down, our sales remained very strong. So we believe that the price is not everything, and that there's still a lot of interest in the communities and a lot of people still joining the crypto market. So,
do you know what the numbers were for Black Friday?
What the numbers
like the number of units you sold?
I know, but I won't disclose.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, no worries. But good. And now actually I can give you a referential, quite similar to 2017 Black Friday, which wow. says a lot. Yeah.
Wow. That is pretty impressive. Mm. Okay.
So a little less to be fair, but close,
okay.
Like not to a factor of like, five times less, actually on par, like, you know, sort of on par. So that's one number. We ship those products in more than 165 countries, which is also a cool number, meaning like everyone on the planet is doing crypto. There's not one dark country for us, like where nobody orders our products. Like, yep. You know,
a very global business.
Yeah, a very global business. When it comes to the Vault product, we've already signed and/or onboarded 30 clients. So that's good.
Congratulations.
And counting. We have more than 500 prospects. And again, it's a very global business. We have this week opened our office in New York, announced that we are opening the office in New York. Dimitrios is now our global head of Vault based out of New York, and we have a strong team here. But we equally open an office in Hong Kong to cover APAC. Mm-hmm. So for us, it's all about, you know, being a global tech provider for this industry. And interestingly enough, like we have great conversations in Europe, in the US, in APAC, everywhere, same discussions. So, you know, to testify that the crypto market, whether it's retail or B2B, is truly global.
Got it. And where do you guys want to go next? Right. So you've got a product that I think people like, they are buying, obviously. They feel like it secures their crypto assets. Today, it is mostly focused on support of cryptocurrencies. How many do you guys support?
That's a great question. We have a live page to say how many we support. I don't know, like a lot.
A lot, okay. Yeah. And do you support all like ERC-20 tokens? So when these tokenized securities and stuff come out, you also be able to do that? Or
yes.
Is it more specific around each individual token?
No, I mean, the idea is to support everything, but the bigger idea, I think, is for us, it's an open platform. I mean, part of the platform is open. So the latest tokens that we are supporting have actually, like the applications have actually been coded by third-party developers.
Oh, very cool.
That code on top of our platform. And then, of course, we vet and we approve the application just to make sure it's running smoothly on our operating system. But technically, anyone can develop their own app. So any community that has a new coin and that want that new coin to be supported by Ledger today can actually do it. They join our Slack for developer and you have a team there that is helping them design the code.
Got it. And then, you know, 5 years from now, what is your hope for Ledger in terms of what does it look like? Is it still a security company and you guys have just gotten bigger and more global? Do you envision adding other business lines or kind of other areas to expand into? What's that look like, you know, kind of 5 years out?
Yeah. So there is another business line that we're already doing, which is machines, IoT. So we call it IoT right now. We didn't find a better name, but you know, I think the world, because of crypto, the world, we just shifted into a new world. And this is the world of critical digital assets. There are many digital assets that you don't want to lose now. I give you one example that has nothing to do with crypto. But if you have a pacemaker and that pacemaker becomes a connected object and is connected online for many good reasons, like, you know, your doctor gets a live feed of your heart, et cetera, et cetera. You really don't want that pacemaker to be hacked and stopped because then you die. Until very recently, this was not even a problem. And so there is a big joke in IoT to say there is no S. The S of security doesn't exist in IoT because we've all seen like the Silicon Valley episode where, you know, IoT gets hacked, et cetera. But this is reality. Many IoT's objects have been hacked. And so it's not just IoT. It's to say that those critical digital objects are coming to life now. You know, crypto is one, but like your heart being hacked. Imagine like autonomous cars driving in New York and suddenly someone hacks into the system and gets all the cars to crash, you know, in a world and kill everyone. You know, there is that. And so the vision of Ledger is we're going to be the company to secure those critical digital assets. So if you work in a company and you have that problem and you're SAN paranoid, like you're going to come to us and make sure that your security scheme is actually the best that it can be. And today we believe that for today and for the next 5 years, we probably have the best technology that is sort of reliable, always online, protected by hardware and software, and that can be integrated in any kind of device. Because the hard thing with security, you know, we come from that industry and we have strong security engineers within the company. The difficulty with security and the way it's been done in the past is you secure object by object. So every object is going to have one security scheme and sort of one software and one operating system running into it. And we are sort of building the platform to secure it all. So that's going to be interesting. And the interesting thing is third-party developers will be able to code on top. And so that's very new in security as well. Usually security, I don't tell you what I do. You trust me that I'm good and it will work. Trust me. You know, in our case, and it's not exactly true, but then you go through certification, et cetera. In our case, we will go through certification, but also part of the platform will be open mm-hmm. for third parties to develop on top with the certification that is going to be secure. So that opens many very exciting opportunities and possibilities for the future where anything will be able to be secured with the Ledger operating system and applications will be whatever the coders make them.
Yeah, it's fascinating that you guys are going outside of crypto, right? Because of all these other kind of, you know, critical digital devices. The pacemaker makes a lot of sense. What other types of products fall in that category for you? You may not even be addressing them yet, but just like what are the other types of products in that mission critical digital devices?
Yeah, the pacemaker example is to say that it doesn't need to be crypto. Like whatever has value and however mm-hmm. you define value has to be protected very securely in the future. But I can give you another example that has more to do with crypto and is also very interesting and shows why crypto is going to have a strong impact on our societies. The tokenization of energy, whether it's a molecule of, you know, of oil, electricity, mm-hmm. water, like all of this is very interesting because energy is being traded every day. And yet the way that we account for that trading is very light. Like the technologies are not great. Mm-hmm. So typically we started the partnership with a utility company in France where Ledger is building the technology to be a certificate of origin of the energy. So the way it works is like every windmill, I'm going to make it simple. Every windmill in Europe at some point will have a Ledger element on it. And when the windmill will produce 1 megawatt of green energy, it will go through the Ledger device that will authenticate the fact that it's 1 megawatt of green energy and send that information onto a blockchain to produce a green token that then will be able to be traded by traders. So if you want to make sure to buy green energy, you will buy those tokens.
And so really what you're doing there is you're not only validating the amount of energy, but you're validating the quality or the type of energy that is being being created. And I'm guessing that you can do things like geography, time of day, you know, I don't know what type of regulation, carbon credit, you know, all kinds of things that you can actually code into that token based on your kind of point of generation device that's generating that data.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah, very, very cool. Okay. And then what's the areas of crypto specifically that you think are really interesting, but maybe people aren't building companies in, right? So obviously you got involved in Ledger because somebody pitched you on an idea, you got excited about it, you invested and eventually joined the company. What are those areas today that you're like, man, if somebody pitched me on X, Y, or Z, I think that would be really interesting to see somebody build a huge company there?
So I think that still lots need to be done in data. Like, you know, with all the data.
You love data. I love it.
Data is cool because, and especially in the crypto world, all this data is available. Like, mm-hmm. so you can really do a lot of cool things with it. I don't think, companies are doing enough. You know, my company, Kaiko, I think is doing good right now, but I think we could definitely do better. I think there's a big play in data. And when you see where the data companies are at right now, I think it's good, but could do better. So if someone would came with a grand vision of building this big data company, I think it would make a lot of sense for the industry because there's so many products that you can build, indexes, you know, how to forecast the price, like, you know, a lot of intelligence on the data that the industry should build. So I'm working hard on that matter also with Kaiko, but if someone has super cool ideas, I'm willing to look at it and to invest. But I think data is going to be key for this industry. I think there are cool projects coming. I think, you know, delegated proof of stake, like, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to watch this very closely because it's an intriguing part of the space. Everything is side chains with, I don't know, Lightning, Liquid, all of this is very cool. So companies that are working on Lightning, you know, we look at them a lot because we believe it's important for the future of this industry. And I'm curious about atomic swaps, you know.
Why?
Personally. I don't know. It just right now it doesn't work so well, but he feels that
if it did, it'd be important.
It could be important. Yeah. You know, because finally, you know, the, you know, swapping those coins, like, you know, without having to go through an exchange, a centralized exchange, et cetera, et cetera. Everything that is going towards decentralization, I think, is interesting. Everything that goes towards centralization and rebuilding the old economy with these new tokens, I think, is less interesting personally. But
I think that's fair. All right. Before I end, I usually do a like a rapid fire round of questions. Mm-hmm. And then I end with letting you ask me a question. So think about that while I fire some of these off.
Oh, man.
What do you think the most important company in crypto is other than Ledger?
Another great company in crypto?
The most important.
The most important company in crypto other than Ledger. Wow. So, man, that's a very tough question. And now I'm going to sound like, you know, I'm Ledger maniac and Ledger only, but...
You can't say Ledger.
I can't say Ledger. I won't say Ledger. I want to say, can I ask you the question before, you know, while I think about this one?
Okay.
So...
you want to ask... Okay, all right. You ask me the question while you're thinking. All right.
Yeah. So the question is, you know, what is very exciting, like, because you interview a lot of people, et cetera. So what seems to be like 2019 trend? Like, if you had to say one trend, what do you think it is?
Ooh. It's hard to say what the trend is. So I'm not going to try to call the trend. I'm going to tell you what I'm personally interested in based on conversations I've had with people and what I think it, more and more people are shifting towards or looking at, right? I think it's fair. I think the timing's hard. That's why I'm kind of answering it this way. The state-backed digital currencies, I think, are going to come. I don't know if they will be successful or not, but I think most people are... either oblivious or they're kind of writing them off as, oh, those aren't going to work. I don't think we've yet seen a well-capitalized, well-coordinated nation state say, this blockchain thing's actually pretty interesting. I'm going to create a digital currency that looks similar to those digital decentralized currencies you guys have, but we're going to kind of back it and use it for, you know, monetary policy and things like that in the way that we're used to central banks doing. So I think we'll see more of that on 12, 24, 36 months, but that'll be an interesting thing to look at. Another area that I'm personally interested in, I see more and more people looking at, is blockchain bonds or smart bonds. So the idea of taking, you know, kind of traditional fixed income type assets, but creating digitally native bonds, right? So that they're actually issued on the blockchain, and all of the things that you can do with that, and around making faster, cheaper, you know, more global, more secure, etc. And then the third thing, and this sounds, you know, pretty stupid, but I actually think the trend of 2019 is just going to be building sustainable businesses, right? And so if you think of 17 was like the year of the ICO, everyone, it was fundraising. And then that was like the finish line for a lot of these projects was, let's make this big announcement about fundraising. Then in 2018, it was the like retraction back to not even sanity, but like a true bear market, right? And I think, you know, we're recording this, Bitcoin's at like $4,000. So we're like, we're around the capitulation point for many people. And I think, you know, a lot of tourists got washed out, etc. But I think what happens through the second half of 18 and going into 19 is the real entrepreneurs, they're not shaken by any of this. They're still building. They're going to focus on building companies that have cash flow, profitability. They're going to get monetized doing going public or acquired. And you're going to see some really big kind of behemoths emerge. We probably can't tell who they are until, you know, 21, 22, 23. But they're getting built today, right, and into 2019. And so I think that's going to be a trend in hindsight. We're going to look back and say, oh, 2019 is really the year that a lot of those companies got built, which I think is a good thing and needed by the industry.
Yeah, so I agree with everything you said. And actually, it's a great segue to so I can give you my answer on your question. So I think right now, I don't sort of rate anyone, including Ledger. Your question is hard because you're like, oh, who do you think is great? Like, I think we're all average right now. And I include Ledger into this. I think there is so much that we can do. I mean, what service did you open recently that is doing crypto where you were like, oh, my God, like, you know, this is going to change my life? Not many. Like, you know, most services are very clunky. I have a list of improvements on our own services that is, you know, so long, and we keep adding things, etc. So, like you say, I think the bear market is an exceptional moment for this industry. I mean, because it forces you to do the right things and to actually build great products that make a difference, and when you can look at them and actually be proud. And so I think no one is doing an A-plus job right now. Like, you know, there are a lot of B companies and we are thriving to become A's. So I think a few teams are doing some really good, solid things in the market, but we're not quite where the market needs to be, and no one has a killer product right now. And again, you know, we think Ledger is cool technology, but we also realize the amount of work that we still need to do in order to become the company that we want to become. And so I think that everyone is sort of like that. I mean, other big companies are sort of like in that game. Like, you know, they're doing okay, but they're not doing amazing. Or I don't think anyone is doing amazing. But that's a cheap way of answering your question. So now I'm going to tell you like who I like apart from Ledger. But I thought CryptoKitties was really cool. I think it was an amazing moment. You know, it broke the Ethereum, you know, protocol, and having like this these CryptoKitties remind me of my childhood with the Tamagotchi, etc. I thought that was a cool crypto experience.
I love it. What's the most important book you've ever read?
The Lord of the Rings.
Why?
Why? Because it's a fantastic book to travel. Actually, two books, Lord of the Rings and Foundation by Asimov. Foundation by Asimov actually is a book that helps me every day. So Lord of the Rings, because I like to go into evade in different countries, etc. You know, I think an entrepreneur needs that. Not that I'm the best entrepreneur on the planet, but like, you know, I think like to be able to protect yourself in a new world, and that's what Lord of the Rings does really well. But equally, Asimov with Foundation is an amazing book, and it's something that helps me every day because they have this thing of, and I read it in French, I'm sorry, but psycho history, where they're mathematicians that do these equations to predict the future. And I think it's a very interesting idea. And so they predict the future, and sometimes the future doesn't quite happen the way they predicted it. So they start the equation again and predict another future. And so for me, I always look at my life in the next 5 years, next 10 years. I always have a plan for 5 years, 10 years. After that, it's too long because you have a lot of accidents that are happening. And so Asimov actually and Tolkien were strong readings as a kid.
I love it. Let's admit that there's aliens. So it's a non-crypto question, right? So aliens exist somewhere out there in the world. Mm-hmm. Most of the times they are presented as human comparables, mm-hmm. right? But you never really see alien animals or alien pets. Do you think that those exist, or do you think it's all just one homogeneous species out there as aliens?
So interestingly, I read recently that octopuses were actually not from this planet. There's actually a real theory that is going
what?
On. Yeah, you know, the octopus.
Yeah,
you know,
the octopus in the ocean. Yep.
Octopus in the ocean. There's actually very strong and academic research that's been done on the octopus. And, you know, some people have the theory that the octopus could be an alien form because of the way it's like, I don't remember the details, but because of the way like octopuses are, which is very different from any other living creature on the planet.
You know what you just made me think of, and I've never thought about this before. A lot of times people say, you know, are the aliens already here, right? Meaning, yeah. Are they here on Earth? I've never thought about, are the aliens here, but they just live under the sea?
Yeah. And so, but apparently there's someone that has this theory of the, you know, octopus being like a creature from the space that was actually dropped on Earth because they have such a structure that they believe it's too different to be actually from here. So yeah, maybe, you know,
that's the
octopus.
Wildest answer anyone said. I love that answer.
And my wife hates octopus. So like, you know, when I told her that, she was like, told you so. Like, you know, because she's like, she's this disgusting animal. Like, you can't be from this planet. She's got a deep fear.
Do they serve octopus for food in France?
They do. I actually own a restaurant in Paris, and we do serve octopus.
It's my wife's
despair.
Okay. She doesn't like it. Hasn't tried it.
No.
All right. Maybe I'll come to Paris and we'll go and we'll eat some octopus. Some alien.
You're invited.
Yeah. I'd love to tell people I ate alien. That'd be great.
Exactly.
All right, man. No, thank you so much for coming. This is awesome. I'm a big fan of what you guys are doing at Ledger. And so we'll have to do this again as you guys keep growing.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
All right. You reached the end of the podcast. Congratulations. I appreciate you listening all the way to the end. You deserve a trophy. But before I hand out the virtual trophies, remember to go visit BlockFi.com/pomp. They're the crypto lending leader in the US. They do it in 45 states, interest rates as low as 8%, and you can use the US dollars funded directly to your bank account to do whatever you want. You should definitely go visit BlockFi.com/pomp. You know you want to do it, so just do it. BlockFi.com/pomp.
Hey everyone, Pomp here. If you like this episode of Off the Chain and want to help us take crypto to the top of the Apple, Spotify, and other podcast charts, please do us a favor and rate, review, and subscribe. To review, simply go to the Off the Chain homepage, scroll down until you see the 5 blank stars. Taking 15 seconds to fill those stars in and leave a quick review goes a long way in helping us take the entire crypto ecosystem to the top of the charts. I appreciate you listening and see you next time on Off the Chain.